Gopijana Balava Girivaradhari. Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Jamuna Chiravana Chari. Jamuna Chiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Vrindavan Chandra Radha Vrindavan Chandra Radhe. Jaya Radha Vrindavan Chandra Radha Vrindavan Chandra Radhe. Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Shri Radhe. Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Shri Radhe. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Gurudev, 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 Jaya Jaya Gurudev. Jaya Om Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Paramakrishnaya Stotarashata Sri Shriman Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Shikoho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunigiri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Maya Ki Jai, Jamuna Maya Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru Shri Gauranga. Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 30. This is the chapter entitled The Gopis' Search for Krishna. This is prelude to Rasa Lila. And the gopis came to the forest to answer the song of Krishna's flute, which each one of them heard as Krishna calling them individually. And without knowledge that Krishna was calling all his gopis simultaneously, they abandoned all shelter of their homes and society and families, and most of all of their own reputation and chastity, which is more dear than life to civilized Matajis, and not considering their own future with inevitable condemnation and rejection and shunning by society. Forsaking all their own incentives, understanding only that Krishna is calling and nothing else matters, they ran to the forest to meet with Krishna. And he tested them in various ways, challenging them, discouraging them, and ultimately he left them. And as they were following Krishna's unique footprints through the forest, they noticed that there was intertwined with his unique footprints another set of footprints. And in the 27th verse of the 28th chapter, no, 27th verse of the 30th chapter of the 10th canto, the gopis are discussing the second set of footprints. And this is a very unique and essential verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam because of what is disclosed in this verse, which is the holy name of Radha. Some pundits and others question why the Gaudiya Vaishnavas have so much reverence and high esteem for Srimati Radharani when her name is not even mentioned in the most essential Granta, the Srimad Bhagavatam. The answer is given here. As you'll see, her holy name is contained in the very first word of the 28th verse of chapter 30, canto 10. Anaya radito nunam bhagavan hari ishwaraha yano vihaya govinda pritoya manayadraha. Certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the word Aradita refers to Srimati Radharani. He comments, quote, "The sage Shukadeva Goswami has tried with all endeavor to keep her name hidden, but now it automatically shines forth from the moon of his mouth. That he has spoken her name is indeed her mercy, and thus the word Aradita is like the rumbling of a kettle drum sounded to announce her great good fortune." Although the gopis spoke as if jealous of Srimati Radharani, they were actually ecstatic to see that she had captured Sri Krishna. And then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur proceeds to explain, or at least identify, the different markings on the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, including a couple that are unique to Srimati Radharani's lotus feet alone. On the lotus feet, which are gracing us with their appearance today, this one day only in the year that we can actually have darshan of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, we see, at least we see through the eyes of the scripture, in this purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that the lotus feet of the divine couple contain many emblems simultaneous to both and a few unique to Srimati Radharani. First, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions the conch. As we see offered in Artik, there's two conch shells, one small conch holding water, which follows the ghee lamp, and then another conch sounding the end of the Artik. The conch shell which holds the water following the flame signifies the nectar of their lotus feet soothes and cools the burning conflagration of this world and actually extinguishes the whole fire of samsara for those who take shelter of those lotus feet. And the sound of the conch shell, which struck terror in the hearts of the Kauravas before the battle of Kurukshetra, and signifies victory for the devotees, ultimate victory over our battles in this material world, because with the shelter of the lotus feet adorned with that conch shell, the Lord assures fearlessness and protection, and that the whole ocean of material existence, which is too vast to cross, shrinks to the size of the water contained in the hoof print of a calf for those who take shelter of that, those lotus feet, and then they can very easily step over. And the flag on those lotus feet symbolizes victory. And the fish on those lotus feet symbolizes the wavering nature of fish who swim around underneath the waves of the water. And this symbolizes the mind, which tends to be very fickle and always distracted to go here and there. But by meditating on the lotus feet of the divine couple, when those lotus feet actually enter our hearts, then the mind finds that shelter from which it can never be diverted or distracted or deviated. And the fish also symbolizes that just as fish cannot live out of water, devotees cannot live without the shelter of the lotus feet of their lordships, which symbolizes devotional service. And unique to the lotus feet of Sri Radha, that fish symbolizes that Krishna cannot live without her love. And of course, conversely, she cannot live without Krishna's love. And the lotus flower adorning the lotus feet of that divine couple symbolizes the superior nectar which lures our mind beyond the dryness of karma and gyan to reside ultimately in Vrindavan, where those lotus feet bestow their ultimate benedictions upon the surrendered souls. And the goad for controlling elephants symbolizes the only way to control the elephant-like mind is, and keep it on the right path, is the higher taste for which the mind is always yearning and seeking and is found only in devotional service, represented by the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And unique to the lotus feet of Radha, that goad for controlling elephants signifies that she alone has the power to conquer Krishna's mind. And the barley corn, symbolizing our sustenance and opulence in life, means the nourishment of the soul can only be obtained from devotional service, symbolized by the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. The altar, signifying the place of sacrifice where all our sins are burned to ashes, symbolizes how the universe is nurtured by sacrifice, and Krishna is nourished by the sacrifice of Sri Radha, which exemplifies her unique quality of pure and selfless love for him. The half moon on the lotus feet of the Lords symbolizes the emblem on the heads of the devas, such as Lord Shiva, who yearns to place the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord upon his head. And it also means that devotees who keep that dust upon their heads become exalted more so than the demigods. And just as the moon showers nectar by its cool and soothing rays, the lotus feet of the divine couple bestows that nectar, which soothes the soul from the burning effects of the fire, blazing fire of samsara. And it also signifies how the moon, which is like the controlling deity of the mind, experiences its waning good fortune by meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. And the upcurving line is like the lifeline to which we must cling. The lifeline descending from the highest realm right down to the lowest to pick up the jiva souls from this mortal world and take us back home, back to Godhead. And the pitcher means the nectar of immortality, which, though it is being poured down upon the surrendered souls to extinguish the fire of samsara for them, that pitcher of immortality is still ever full. And the disc on the lotus feet of the divine couple symbolizes that weapon of the Lord which cuts to shreds the six enemies of the devotees: kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. And unique on the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, the disc symbolizes that she is the queen of that circle of Brajmandala. And the umbrella means we will be shielded from material miseries only by taking shelter of the lotus feet of the divine couple. And unique on the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, it signifies that Krishna finds relief from his burning separation only by her service. And the thunder bolt on the lotus feet of the divine couple symbolizes the weapon, the only means to shatter to smithereens the mountain of our karmic reactions. And the chariot, the means by which we can arrive at our ultimate destination, also alludes to the chariot driver, Sri Krishna, awarding victory in the battle with Maya. And the club on the lotus feet of the divine couple means that this is the only way to chastise this elephant of lust, the all-devouring, sinful enemy of all the world. The earring on the lotus feet means that Krishna is always listening for the sound of Srimati Radharani's ankle bells, and he lives for the shelter of her lotus feet. The lotus flower, unique to the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, means her fame expands like fragrance. And just as the fruit, fruit follows the blossoming of flowers on a tree, the fruit of prema bhakti follows the benediction of her lotus feet adorned with that flower and signifying devotional service. The creeper means just as the devotee's heart seeks shelter of a tree to climb upon to reach the higher destination, the devotees seek the shelter of her lotus feet, offering residence in Vrinda's forest, where the goddess of herbal medicine awards the cure to all, to the disease of materialism. And the devotees cling to those lotus feet like a creeper in order to ascend to the higher realms of devotional service. So this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam describing those lotus feet of the Lord is very illuminating, because Radhita means Anaya Radhita, by her Krishna has been perfectly worshipped. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the gopis who are just saying, this gopi who has lured Krishna away must have most perfectly and selflessly worshipped him in order so that he would leave with her alone. Her name is not directly stated anywhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but here it is mentioned in a covered fashion. And the reason is that Shukadev Goswami is actually, as we hear throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Shuka. The Shuka, the parrot of Sri Radharani. Her pet parrot, who used to sit on her left hand while she would lovingly feed him with her right hand and request him to sing the holy names of Krishna, which he would do in the sweetest voice, trained to chant the holy name of Krishna by Srimati Radharani herself. And one day this parrot flew off to Nandagram, and Krishna, who was sitting with Madhu Mangal and his other boyfriends, heard his holy name being sung so softly and so sweetly as to captivate his mind. And he looked into the tree and saw this parrot and held out his hand, and the parrot landed. And Krishna asked, who are you? And the parrot said, I'm the most unfortunate person in all creation, because I've left the supreme shelter of Srimati Radharani and come here. And then Krishna realized that he had such deep love for his beloved. And Krishna was enchanted by this parrot. And he asked him to stay in this world after Sri Sri Radha and Krishna concluded their pastimes, to reveal to this world the illumination of their love in the process of a devotional service. So when Sri Sri Radha and Krishna concluded their earthly lila, Shuka, seeking shelter in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, went to Kailash, the abode of Lord Shiva, and heard Krishna's pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam from him, but then he got in trouble with Lord Shiva and sought shelter in the womb of Vyasadeva's wife, where he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva himself. And only then would he come out of the womb, fearless in the material world, after imbibing the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then himself repeating those holy topics in his narration to Maharaj Pariksit, had to control himself. He would become so overly emotional if he ever mentioned the name of his mistress that he would become externally inert, internally excited for at least 6 months upon the mere mention of her holy name, which he therefore had to avoid because Maharaj Pariksit only had 7 days in which to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Shukadeva Goswami could not directly mention the holy name of his mistress. But yet, those who have eyes to see and ears to hear detect her holy name everywhere. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is the description of the various stages of pure devotional service culminating in the love of the gopis, which finds its perfection in Srimati Radharani. And we hear throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Shuka Uvacha, Srimati Radharani's parrot is speaking. He's speaking about pure devotional service in the lives of Prahlad Maharaj and Bharat Maharaj and the Pandavas and the Prachetas, Ambarish Maharaj, himself Shukadeva Goswami, culminating in the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. And we hear also in Srimad Bhagavatam how when Krishna was residing in Dwarka, he sent his cousin brother and dear intimate friend, Uddhava, to Vrindavan, apparently to console the Brijabasis in their burning fire of separation from Krishna. Sri Uddhava, such a learned, exalted, cultured person, disciple of Brihaspati, so highly qualified, was thinking, how could he live in Vrindavan without the personal association of Krishna with which he was so much accustomed that in great intimacy he would lie in the same bed with Krishna and discuss all kinds of topics with Krishna and eat and sleep with Krishna. And he was thinking, how can I live in Vrindavan without Krishna? But Krishna instructed him to go there and pacify the residents of Vrindavan, who Krishna was fearing would just perish in the burning fire of separation from him. But really, Krishna sent Uddhava, although such an exalted devotee, to witness for himself the more highly exalted level of devotional service of the Brijabasis. So Krishna gave Uddhava his own clothing to wear, his own yellow dhoti, his own golden turban, his own Vajayanti garland, his own jewels, his own chariot. And he said, go to Vrindavan. So he took him to Mother Rohini to receive her blessings. And Mother Rohini was mortified. You're sending your servant to pacify the residents of Vrindavan and tell them that you haven't forgotten them? This is most unusual. It'll never work. It'll just increase their lamentation and inflame their separation. And then Mother Rohini told Krishna that, I used to think that you were very kind-hearted, but now I'm beginning to wonder. And I think that you're really very hard-hearted. You know the residents of Vrindavan are just dying in separation from you, and you never once gone there. And now you're asking my blessings for your servant to go on your behalf to quench the blazing fire of separation in the hearts of the Brijabasis. It'll only increase it. The Brijabasis, they've cried so much in separation from you, they've gone practically blind. They've been harassed by all the demons sent by Kamsa because of you. They've devoted life and soul to you. And now you won't even go visit them, you're sending your servant. And then Balaram came in. He heard the conversation, and he came in, and he said, she's right. He didn't support Krishna at all. He said, she's right, my dear brother. You are so cruel. Not because he'd sent Balaram previously, and Balaram reported to Krishna that Nanda and Yashoda, they've gone practically blind because of incessantly crying for you. And the gopis are just all shriveled. They never laugh or play anymore. And the gopis who've dedicated everything for you, they're roaming around Vrindavan like ghosts and scattered throughout the forest, frozen like petrified statues, crippled by this separation from you. And Srimati Radharani, she doesn't eat, she doesn't sleep, she simply cries day and night, and her beautiful lotus face is always wet with tears. So brother, believe me, this is the truth. And he affirmed what Rohini said, you're very cruel and hard-hearted, Krishna. And Krishna was so emotional. He couldn't even write a letter. He had to give his message to Uddhava to deliver on his behalf. So Uddhava went in the chariot, and when he saw the pastoral panorama of Vrindavan unfolding before his eyes, and then he began to notice the Brijabasis wandering around almost lifelessly, performing their duties as if in a dream state. The elder gopis were like statues. The younger ones were singing about Krishna's pastimes while just crying, never-ending tears. And then Uddhava, his first realization awakened that I'm coming from Dwarka, where I have the Lord's constant association. But Krishna is more fully present here in Vrindavan, even though he's residing in Dwarka. He's more fully present in the hearts of these Brijabasis in their separation. They're so absorbed in him that Uddhava realized that Krishna is only partially present in Dwarka. So then the gopis began to ask amongst themselves, who's this beautiful personality who's dressed just like Krishna? And they started speculating that it looks like Krishna's just showing off, sending this magnificent chariot with this boy wearing his own clothes and jewelry and turban and garland. And then Uddhava, who had always thought, and he actually was, the best devotee in all the world outside of Vrindavan, he began to think that he wasn't even a devotee at all. And while riding into Vrindavan on this beautiful golden chariot given to him by Krishna, hearing the gopis say that, looks like Krishna's just showing off, sending a messenger on this opulent chariot. And Uddhava, he just felt like finding a hole to crawl in. He did not even want to appear before the gopis. So he thought better to go straight to Nandagram and see if he could pacify Nanda Jashoda. But when he arrived in Nandagram, he was mortified. Mother Jashoda was lying as if in a catatonic stupor in the corner of the palace. These stoves were covered with cobwebs. She hadn't cooked since Krishna left. And Nanda Maharaj, when he heard a chariot thundering up, his heart leaped and he jumped up to see, who is this personality? Oh, it's Uddhava. So he approached Uddhava and asked him, how's my brother Vasudev? And how's my son Balaram? He purposely could not utter Krishna's holy name. It just choked him up, the thought of Krishna. So he asked about Vasudev and Baladev. And then when he ventured to ask about Krishna, he just choked up and fell down crying. And Uddhava was thinking, I've never seen anything like this. I've never imagined love like this. So he lifted Nanda Maharaj and embraced his lotus feet. And then he realized, how can anyone pacify these prajapasis? So Uddhava, who was very intelligent and who perfectly understood diplomacy and psychology and could detect the essence of every situation, just quietly holding Nanda Maharaj, embracing Nanda Maharaj's lotus feet, began reflecting, and then he blurted out, Nanda Maharaj, you are the most fortunate being in all of creation. And Nanda Maharaj looked at him in complete amazement. What kind of nonsense are you saying? You're saying I'm the most fortunate person? Because the Supreme Absolute Truth Himself, Krishna, took birth as your son and played in your lap. And you, as His unique loving father, had the unique privilege and intimacy to chastise Him as your own son. So intimate is your love and His receiving your love in the form as your child. And Nanda Maharaj said, it's actually just the opposite of that, my dear immature boy. Listen. You say I'm most fortunate. I say I am the most unfortunate being in all of creation. Because Krishna played in my lap, in my courtyard as my son, and I was thinking of him as my son, I never realized, it never crossed my mind hardly, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now he's left me. And then he told him the Chintamani story. There was a man who had a Chintamani stone, which he thought was so beautiful. It was such a beautiful stone. And then one day he lost it. And he started asking around, has anybody seen the beautiful stone that I lost? It's a beautiful stone. Don't you know that was a Chintamani gem that could produce anything you might ever desire? The man never realized it was a Chintamani gem. He thought it was just a beautiful stone. So when he went searching for it and inquiring about it, only then did he realize the treasure which he had already lost. He said, I'm just like that man with the Chintamani gem, because the Supreme Absolute Truth took birth as my child And I never realized it. I only thought of him as my child, and now he's left me. And still I live. And this is proof of my misfortune that I have no love for Krishna. I'm still living in his absence. So Uddhava is just becoming more upset and more confused since his arrival in Vrindavan. And he couldn't sleep all night. And he thought, and he was reflecting, yes, Nanda Maharaj is right. I'm so immature. It's a good thing I didn't go to the gopis first. But he tried to compose himself to address them on the next day. And when he came out of the palace and the gopis saw, he looks very much like Krishna. And it is, as Srila Prabhupada said, being unsophisticated village girls, they just gathered around him. They wanted to know who is it and why is he here? And then they heard he had a message from Krishna. Uddhava spoke, these are the words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Know for certain that separation is impossible because I'm all-pervading. I've left you just to increase your super excellent love, and in that meditation show how one can always be present with me. And he assured them that no one could ever replace them in the core of Krishna's heart. So this message sufficed to cool the fire of separation and adjust the lamentation of the gopis within the parameters of life. And then Uddhava noticed a black bumblebee who was trying to take shelter of Srimati Radharani's lotus feet. And on pretense of speaking with the bumblebee, she was actually speaking to Uddhava. That bumblebee was very greedy, longing for the fragrance of her lotus feet. And she started chastising that bumblebee. Don't try to touch my lotus feet, because I know who you are. You're the most unreliable servant of the most unreliable master. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur extracts the essence of the seed verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he explains that it wasn't just a monologue, it was a dialogue with the bee. By his humming at her lotus feet, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining the questions that Srimati Radharani is hearing from the bee. He says, what do you mean I'm an unreliable servant of an unreliable master? And she said, I know about Krishna. He's a cheater. And the bee said, what do you mean? Because when he was leaving Braj, he said he'll be back tomorrow, or at utmost the day after tomorrow. He never came back. And not only that, but birth after birth after birth, he's a cheater. In his previous birth, he was so attached to his wife that even when he went to the forest, as a kshatriya, when that beautiful chaste Suparnika approached him and expressed her desire, he should have fulfilled her. But he cut off her nose. Who would ever marry her after that? You say he's kind and soft-hearted. I say he's cruel. And then when he had to kill Bali, as a kshatriya, he should have faced him. But he shot him while hiding behind a tree. He's a cheater. And in his previous life, I've heard all this from my grandmother Purnamasi, he as Vamana, he approached that charitable soul, Bali Maharaj, and requested just 3 footsteps of land. With the first 2, he covered the whole gross and subtle material nature within the universe. And then with his third on the head of Bali Maharaj, pushed him down to Sutala. And you say he's grateful? What kind of gratitude is this? And then the bee started saying, well, why are you accusing me? I'm just a servant. And she said, and he was trying to take the dust of her lotus feet. She said, no. If you want to offer obeisances, then fly far away and offer obeisances from a long, respectful distance. Just stay away from my feet. I said, what do you mean? He said, because my lotus feet will be contaminated by your touch, because you're just a drunk. I said, what are you talking about? Why are you accusing me of this? Because your whiskers are saffron, and I know why. Because you were hovering around that garland of Krishna, which is smeared with saffron from the breast of some other woman who dared to touch the garland that I made for Krishna. And you had the audacity to come to me without even washing your mustache? So don't go there. Don't go near my feet. You've come to reconcile while revealing such a complete lack of discrimination? Just get out of here. And then by his bzzz humming, the bee said, well, still you can be happy because Krishna is yours. And then he was begging remnants, her remnants, for him to worship. And she said, you're not worthy. You're lower than an animal. Animals have four legs. You, my dear bee, have six legs. So you're really an animal and a half. And then the bee said, but in Mathura, tender-hearted Krishna was meditating on you alone. And then the bee asked, but why, if all you're doing in this conversation is criticizing Krishna, why do you still desire him? And why you can't stop talking about him and thinking about him no matter what? And she said, this is the whole problem. Once tasting that nectar, one drop of that nectar from the holy name of Krishna, the topics of Krishna, Maharaj Pratapruta, advised by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said it succinctly. Topics about Krishna are so transcendentally powerful that they destroy all propensities for dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Any affinity or affection for this material world is destroyed once one drop of Krishna katha enters your ears. When that drop enters your ears and proceeds to your heart, or as Rupa Goswami says, it conquers the mind and senses, makes them materially inert. And as Maharaj Pratapruta concluded, just repeating the gopis, then one loses all interest in the material world. He can't sustain himself. He becomes pulled in irresistibly to Vrindavan, where he has to live like a beggar. He becomes unfortunate, and he comes to the land of the unfortunate. He loses everything, and he becomes a beggar. To wander like a bird, begging for a little sustenance here and there. So then, after hearing all Srimati Radharani's criticisms, the bee disappeared. And she thought, oh no, he's gone and told Krishna what I said. She became very repentant and begging for his forgiveness. Then he came back. And then, through the bee, conversing with Uddhava, and then she finally returned to him and asked, does Krishna remember us? And then Uddhava explained how Krishna never forgot the love of the Brijavasis, but Uddhava experienced for himself that Krishna is more present in Vrindavan than he is even in Dwarka. And then he understood why Krishna sent his servant to Vrindavan, to see for himself the super excellent form of devotion personified by the Braj Gopis with Srimati Radharani at their lead. Srila Prabhupada told a story about Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who lived close to one another in Braj, and are those Braj Gopis, Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari, from Krishna Lila, returned in Gaur Lila to assist in Lord Gauranga's munificent pastimes of bestowing Krishna Prem in this world. Rupa Goswami lived at Terkadamba, in the shade of that Kadamba tree, who was so infused by his own mood of devotion, just by proximity and the service of shading him from the sun, that tree, when Rupa Goswami would narrate or write about the separation of Radha and Krishna, that tree would shed all its leaves, just as a devotee would shed tears. And then when Rupa Goswami would chant or write about the meeting of Radha and Krishna, that tree would spontaneously burst into bloom in great rapture. So Srila Prabhupada explained. And then Sanatana Goswami lived at Pavansravar, and they would come together most every day and just immerse themselves in Krishna Katha. And morning would turn into noon, and noon to afternoon, and afternoon to evening. Just, they were so intoxicated in these sweet topics of Krishna that they would forget the external world altogether. And one day, when they were just immersed in Krishna Katha, there's different versions of this, the same pastime. Rupa Goswami, as the day was passing, was thinking, my guru, my elder brother, has come and I haven't given him anything to eat all day. This is very disrespectful. And while he was thinking like that, a most charmingly attractive young girl came to the door of their bhajan kutir and addressed him, Babas, my mother told me to come here with these ingredients for cooking because she saw that you were so immersed in holy topics. So please take this rice and this milk and this sugar, make some nice kheer, offer it to Krishna, and honor his remnants. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were deeply immersed in Krishna Katha. And although they were formerly leading the government, the most able rulers of the land, they, upon receiving the blessing of Krishna Katha from Lord Gauranga, they lost all interest in all their opulence and all their power and all their prestige and all their scholarship. And although great pundits in Sanskrit and Arabic and Bengali became simple, humble beggars in Vrindavan, and they would never look at any Mataji. The most beautiful Mataji to them was just like a piece of stone. It could not allure their minds, which are so immersed in Krishna Katha. But something about this young girl was actually drawing their minds away from Krishna Katha. So they were, in the back of their minds, they were hearing the words of this young girl. And then she saw that they're also so immersed in, okay, I'll do the cooking. So she started a fire and she made this nice kheer and she offered it and then gave it to Rupa Goswami. Now you can honor this kheer, but I have to go because my mother's going to be worried. So goodbye. And she disappeared. And there's this nice pot of kheer. So Rupa Goswami offered the cure to his elder brother and guru, and together they honored the remnants of Sri Krishna in the form of this cure. And when they tasted that cure, they felt the waves of the most ambrosial nectar just pulsating through every aspect of their being. It was as if the words of this girl, the taste of this cure, was just from another dimension beyond the celestial realm. Now Rupa and Sanatan, they had tasted the remnants of Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra in Puri. They had personally received from the hands of Govinda Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu's own remnants, touched by his lotus lips. But they've never tasted anything like this cure. And they were just transported to the very realm of that Krishna Katha in which they were so immersed. And they were thinking, who was that little girl? And then Sanatana Goswami asked Rupa, did you have any desire in your heart? He said, well, actually, yes. I was thinking my elder brother, who's my guru, has come, and it's so disrespectful that throughout the whole day I didn't offer him anything to eat, and I really needed to serve him in some way. And Sanatana Goswami got so deeply disturbed. He said, Rupa Goswami, what have you done? The supreme transcendental goddess whom we worship, for whom we do our puja, to whom we dedicated our lives, who is the object of our meditation, you have forced her to come here and serve us? As Srila Prabhupada said, Sanatana Goswami said to Rupa, you have murdered me. And they just broke down sobbing bitterly on the floor. Just so deeply, terribly, bitterly aggrieved that Srimati Radharani personally had come to serve them. And they just sobbed bitterly for some time. And then when they couldn't cry anymore and they tasted a little bit more of that cure, they were again transported to that realm of immortal nectar and the waves of ambrosial bhakti just pulsating through every dimension of their being, and they were just immersed in such divine rapture they forgot all their sorrow. And then they remembered that little girl and they just broke down sobbing again. How could you do that? The object of our meditation, the object of our puja, the object of our bhajan, the object of everything, has you brought her here to serve us. And they were crying, and then they'd take some more cure and just be transported into divine ecstasy beyond any previous experience. And they started crying, and then finally the cure was gone. And this continued day after day after day. They would just break the pot and every day eat a little bit of the clay pot, and again be transported into that realm of divine ambrosia like waves pulsating through every dimension of their being. And this went on day after day after day. Actually, Srila Prabhupada told the story of the appearance of Srimati Radharani in a very interesting way. You see, King Vrishabhanu and Kirtida, they were having trouble having a child. So they moved down to the bank of Jamuna. And as Srila Prabhupada told the story, King Vrishabhanu was plowing a field. And while he was plowing, in the furrow appeared this beautiful golden baby. And he picked her up and took her back to the queen. And said, look, this beautiful girl who's come. Well, where's she come from? She just appeared in the furrow. It's word for word, except for the names and places, the appearance of Sita Devi. It's not the standard narration of the Leela, but it's one of the versions in different millenniums. The usual version is that Kalavati and Suchandra in the previous millennium were performing tapasya for thousands of celestial years, after which Lord Brahma appeared to them and said, "What is the benediction you desire?" And they said that the Supreme Lord Krishna's internal potency take birth as our daughter. And Brahma blessed them tatashta. So when they take birth as King Vrishabhanu and Kirtida, who's also known as Kalavati, when King Vrishabhanu went to bathe in the river at noon, he saw a golden aura just illuminating the whole realm, and he couldn't even see what it was coming from, but it was in the middle of Jamuna. And when his eyes adjusted, he saw in the water a lotus upon which this beautiful baby was sitting. And then Lord Brahma appeared and placed her in his arms, and he took her back and gave her to the queen. Devi Krishna Mayi Prokta Radhika Paradevata Sarva Lakshmi Mayi Sarva Kanti Sanmohini Para. The transcendental goddess Srimati Radharani is the direct, tender-hearted, feminine counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna. She is the central theme of all the goddesses of fortune. She alone possesses the attractiveness to attract the all-attractive Sri Krishna. She is the primeval, internal, merciful potency of the Lord. And wherever pure devotion is manifest, that is her energy. When Srila Prabhupada was just an infant, he explained how his father would invite many sadhus to their home every day and seek from them the benediction. He told them how to benedict his child. He said, "Bless my child that Srimati Radharani's Srimati Radharani will be pleased with him and bestow upon him her blessings." So when Srila Prabhupada on Radhastami in 1965 was in mid-Atlantic, feeling deep, deep separation from his lords, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, and Radha Damodar, as he was drifting further and further away from his home, Vrindavan, he wrote in his diary that after the heart attacks and storms and seasickness, when he thought he would die, but Lord Sri Krishna appeared to him in another boat and conveyed to him that, "I am carrying you across this ocean." Srila Prabhupada observed Janmashtami and Vyas Puj and even Radhastami, mid-Atlantic. Some days after the heart attacks and the storms and the vision of Sri Krishna, he wrote again in his diary, "It is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita which is sustaining me in my deep separation." And then he composed from his illustrious heart a spontaneous poem beginning with, "I emphatically say to you all, O brothers, you will attain good fortune from the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna only when Srimati Radharani is pleased with you." It is my Guru Maharaj Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who is unparalleled in his devotion to Lord Gauranga, who bestows intense devotional service at various places in the world. And by his desire, the holy name of Krishna will resound throughout the world. And when that vast mercy of Lord Gauranga expands like a flood to inundate the Western worlds and all of the land, when all the sinful, miserable living entities become happy, then only are the Vaishnavas' desires truly fulfilled. Because Srimati Radharani is the tender-hearted, loving mother of compassion who feels for her lost children. And therefore, Lord Sri Krishna, reflecting on his own Leela, that it wasn't really complete. He manifests his grudge pastimes. He annihilated the demons. He reestablished the principles of devotion. He inspired and encouraged his devotees. But Krishna, after concluding his earthly Leela, was feeling incomplete, as recorded in the words of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that not many people were really attracted to Krishna's Brajlila. So he concluded, I will have to come again and reveal pastimes that are astounding even to the devotees in Goloka. I will reveal pastimes by which I myself am amazed. Thereafter, and simultaneously, Krishna was pondering, how is it that Srimati Radharani bewilders and attracts me? How is it that she conquers and controls me? I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Controller, Madan Mohan. What is it about her that conquers and controls even me? Such is the depth of her love. And Krishna was astonished even more to contemplate how I am the source of all bliss and spiritual joy. How is it that the gopis experience 10 million times more ecstasy than me, whom the source and personification of that transcendental ecstasy? He longed to experience the love of the gopis. I am the object of that love, Krishna was thinking. What is it that the abode of that love experiences? And from the perspective of the jivas, this theology is very significant, because as jiva souls, minute, infinitesimal sparks of Krishna's splendor, how much love can we offer to Krishna? And how much of his love can we even receive and assimilate in and of ourselves? We're so limited in every respect. And therefore, Radha Dasyam, service to Srimati Radharani, is the blessing which Mahaprabhu bestowed. Because in serving her, then our infinitesimal offerings of love become so magnified, so multiplied by her touch. And as Srila Prabhupada explained, when she says to Krishna, this devotee is sincere, he's trying to please you, please accept him, then Krishna, even though we may be a fool, Krishna has to accept, if that is the appeal of Srimati Radharani. And then, by her blessings, by her touch, we can receive so much of Krishna's mercy in connection with devotional service to her. And therefore, Gaudiya Vaishnavas do not aspire to be devotees of Krishna. Because what can we really offer Krishna? Gaudiya Vaishnavas aspire for Radha Dasyam, service to Srimati Radharani. Because by her touch only will our infinitesimal offerings of love and devotion be magnified to something worthy of offering to Krishna. And how can we please her? By serving her servants. Wherever devotion is manifest in this world, that is her energy, that is her Shakti. Service to these maidservants of Srimati Radharani and Goloka begins here on earth with serving those devotees
in whom Krishna has placed us as our association. And we should know that wherever pure devotion is manifest, that is her energy, that is her representative. And by serving those great souls who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord in this world, of assisting Srila Prabhupada in his mission, then Lord Gauranga will be pleased. He is the unique combined form of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And when he is pleased, Radha and Krishna are pleased, and they offer the shelter and benediction of their lotus feet in the form of devotional service, which is the purpose and the goal and the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam wasn't really compiled to narrate the pastimes of Sri Krishna, which had already been done in so many Puranas. It was really to extol the glories of pure devotional service as personified in Srimati Radharani. Otherwise, why, when child Nimai, little Lord Gauranga, was offered his choice of the coins or the grains or the books or the Srimad Bhagavatam, did he go straight to the Srimad Bhagavatam and embrace it to his heart? It's because the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled to reveal the glories of pure devotional service personified in Srimati Radharani. And that is why Lord Gauranga embraced that book to his heart, because it is perfectly free of any taints of karma and jnana, and completely rejects all forms of motivated devotional service. Our devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to perfectly satisfy the heart. And the example of unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service is found in the Brijavasis with Srimati Radharani at their lead. And therefore, they to this day greet one another with Jai Shri Radhe. And Srila Prabhupada would respond, Hare Krishna. Because the Maha Mantra is Lord Gauranga's gift to this world and Srila Prabhupada's blessing upon the Western world. The Maha Mantra is the Yugala Mantra of Radha and Krishna, the original vibration of the spiritual sky, the highest, most esoteric love dances in that mantra, in the sounds of the holy names of Radha and Krishna. And that highest, most pure mantra of the spiritual world, which is so esoteric and so inconceivable, descends to the lowest regions of the most fallen to deliver us because of the mercy of Srimati Radharani, personified in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and represented by their dearmost servant, His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, who brought the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, to the Western world to deliver us with Krishna Bhakti. So Srila Prabhupada's books are arranged at the table over there. We request everyone to take Srila Prabhupada's books for yourself and to give to your friends as the most precious object to be shared. Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? Yes.
Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra is
There is no difference in the Nimbark Sampradaya. They chant Radhe Krishna, Radhe Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radhe 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 Shyam, Radhe Shyam Shyam Shyam, Radhe Radhe. We chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Rama, Hare Hare. There's no difference. Hare is Radhe. It is the feminine of Hari, Hara, who steals away the mind of Krishna. There's no difference. But like the Srimad Bhagavatam, which does not directly mention the name of Srimati Radharani because it is so pure and so exalted, Shukadeva Goswami also, looking at the assembly before whom he was speaking, understood that all these sages are not so perfectly pure in heart as to be worthy of hearing the holy name and glories of Srimati Radharani. So he spoke her glories and her name in a concealed way. Just like it used to be that chaste ladies would keep their heads covered in public, Shukadeva Goswami has kept Srimati Radharani's holy name and glories slightly concealed from those who do not have the proper adhikar qualification. And this also helps us because things achieved with some difficulty are more appreciated. And Shukadeva Goswami, understanding that the most precious treasure of one's heart needs to be protected from those who would not properly appreciate or understand. So he kept concealed in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in distributing Radha Krishna Prem in a world of unqualified souls, kept her holy name concealed within her other name, Hara. But he gave it in the vocative, Hare, which means Radhe. This is a plaintive plea from a penitent heart for mercy. And it's answered in the form of devotional service, the essence of which is chanting those holy names. So we'll continue this afternoon. Thank you for your patience. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.